Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Please silence all cell phones. The time is 1:35 on PM on Monday, April 22nd, 2024. Today, I'm joined by Co-Chairman Stedman, Co-Chairman Hoffman, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick. And I'd like to go ahead and acknowledge that we have Representative Mina, who's in the audience as well this afternoon. We're hearing five bills today, Senate Bill 149, Senate Bill 204, Senate Bill 248, Senate Bill 182, and Senate Bill 234. First up, Bill is Senate Bill 149, the Food Stamp Program Eligibility by Senator Diesel. This is the first hearing. We have both the bill sponsor as well as her staffer up here. Please come on up to the table and present the bill, please. You don't need to go through a sectional analysis, you just present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Kathy Giesel. I'm the Senator for Senate District E. That's part of the municipality of Anchorage, including Whittier. Mr. Chairman, this bill, Senate Bill 149, addresses broad-based categorical eligibility. The BBCE, as it's known, is an alternative for SNAP. So this is a flexibility program for folks to be eligible for SNAP benefits. 42 states and two territories have adopted this policy. It increases the income limit that would be required, and that allows people to actually accept raises and still be eligible for SNAP assistance. It also removes the asset test, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, that limits how many assets the family can hold. You know that an automobile is expensive, and to limit that as limit the value of that as an asset limits people's ability to get to work. In rural Alaska, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, you know that boats, snow machines, etc., used for subsistence cost something. We want to eliminate those from being considered a liability for being eligible for SNAP. So, Mr. Chairman, it's a pretty straightforward bill. Thank you for hearing it today. My staff, Paige Brown, is here if you did decide you'd want a sectional, but we also have invited testimony from the Food Bank of Alaska, Catholic Community Services, and, of course, we have the Division of Public Assistance available for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have any questions for the bill sponsored by members of the committee? If not, Ms. Brown, would you please go ahead with a short sectional analysis?
So Section 1 updates the reference to the chapter of the United States Code governing the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. This section also increases the household income limits for the SNAP program from 130% to 200% of the Alaska Poverty Standard and eliminates the household asset test. Section 2 provides the authority for the Department of Health to adopt the necessary regulations to implement this act. Section 3 provides for an immediate effective date for Section 2, and Section 4 provides for an effective date of July 1st, 2025.
Okay, any questions by members of the committee for either the bill sponsor or trustee, Ms. Brown? If not, we'll go ahead and move on to invited testimony. Ron Meehan is online. Mr. Meehan, are you on, sir?
Can you hear me?
We're coming up on the volume, but go ahead and identify yourself for the record and who you're with, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair Olson and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Ron Meehan. I am the Director of Government Affairs for the Food Bank of Alaska and the manager of the Alaska Food Coalition. The Alaska Food Coalition represents more than 180 food banks, food pantries, tribal organizations, faith-based groups, health centers, and more across the state. I'm here today to testify in support of SB 149 to implement broad-based categorical eligibility, which will increase government efficiency, reduce the time necessary to process SNAP applications, and provide economic security to hardworking Alaskans. SNAP is the most effective food assistance program in the United States. It helps more than 92,000 Alaskans put food on the table. That's around one in eight. The program also stimulates the economy, particularly for local businesses and in rural areas. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that for every dollar spent using SNAP benefits, $1.50 is generated in economic activity. And in 2022, nearly $350 million was spent in Alaska using SNAP benefits. And that doesn't factor in the money generated in the economy from those benefits. SNAP is a federal program administered by the state. The benefits are 100% federally funded, and administrative costs are a 50-50 state and federal split. States have a lot of latitude in how the program is administered. And in implementing BBCE, Alaska will be able to eliminate the asset test and raise the income limit for certain households. Alaska currently uses the federal baseline for assets, which is $2,750 for most households. Households with at least one elderly or disabled family member cannot have savings, including money in the bank, over $4,250. This does not allow for meaningful savings or emergency funds. And so if an individual has $5,000 in the bank for a car or a rental deposit, they would be denied benefits under the asset test. However, they could spend that money down and then potentially qualify. The state shouldn't punish hardworking Alaskans for becoming more economically independent. Seniors may also work their entire lives in order to own their own home, but would be expected or need to sell it and spend through their savings in order to access needed food assistance. We know many households in Alaska depend on their fishing boats, ATVs, or equipment for subsistence or hunting. These all count as assets, and Alaskans are disqualified from SNAP for having them. Ultimately, we want people to become self-sufficient, but they can't if they aren't able to save and get off the program. Without BBCE, SNAP recipients may be offered a small raise at their job, but turn it down as it could put them over the limit to be eligible for SNAP. They could lose their benefits and end up worse off with the raise. Many are unable to work a second job for the same reason. The way SNAP eligibility is currently structured actually disincentivizes work. In eliminating this benefits cliff, BBCE transitions people off benefits and incentivizes them to work. It also lowers churn, which occurs when SNAP households stop participating in SNAP, either for procedural reasons or because they briefly become ineligible and then reapply within a very short period of time. This creates added work for state workers, eligibility technicians, and benefit gaps for SNAP households. BBCE also allows the state to eliminate the asset test. Assets are notoriously time-consuming, error-prone, and difficult to verify. And without the asset test, the state will cut down on the administrative time needed to work a case, thereby saving money and allowing the Division of Assistance to process applications faster. Over the impending SNAP backlog of the last year and a half, we've directly seen that when SNAP doesn't work, Alaskans in need are turning to our network of food banks and food pantries that are already stretched thin. Food pantries and shelters indeed continue to see record levels of use. The state has already been overburdened and overworked. We've seen that with these backlogs of SNAP and Medicaid applications over the last year and a half. So eliminating unnecessary verifications will increase efficiencies in processing applications, reduce the likelihood of another backlog, and make the program work better. We're also currently in the minority, being one of only 8 states without BBCE. And the 42 states and 2 territories already effectively utilizing it have proven that this policy helps people get out of poverty by allowing them to save and get off the program. Kentucky is an example of a state that fairly recently implemented BBCE and saw a reduction in workload and a cost savings. Raising the income limit and removing the asset test will allow SNAP participants to climb their way to financial security by giving them the ability to accept pay raises and set aside savings for the future. Modest assets enable low-income families to avoid debt, weather unexpected financial disruptions, and better prepare to support themselves in retirement. Iowa is the only recent state that has moved away from this national trend. Their legislature required the state to implement the asset test in 2023 last year. The Iowa fiscal note estimated that it would take their state agency an additional 28 minutes per case to verify assets. Their caseload was about 135,000 households at the time. And so their fiscal note identified that they would need to hire about 47 new eligibility technicians at a cost of $2.8 million a year to implement the asset test. It's expensive to not implement DBCE. More than two-thirds of SNAP participants in Alaska are in families with children, and more than 30% are in households with at least one individual who is a senior or disabled. DBCE will provide targeted assistance to low-income working families and seniors with high cost of living while saving the state money and increasing government efficiency. I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to testify and to Senator Giesel for introducing this important legislation. I strongly encourage the committee to move this bill forward, and I'm happy to take any questions or to provide any follow-up needed with members of the committee.
Do we have any questions of Mr. Meehan by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Meehan. Next we have up for invited testimony is Aaron Walker, Tolls. Please come on up, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Aaron Walker Tolles. I am Executive Director of Catholic Community Service based here in Juneau and serving all of Southeast Alaska. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. I've been Executive Director of Catholic Community Service for 9 years now, and we have 10 senior centers throughout Southeast Alaska. We have served primarily seniors and their caretakers, and the largest program, most popular program we have is the Senior Nutrition Program, and most folks know that as the hot meal you get at the senior center or Meals on Wheels. What we've seen is that we've never seen such growth in demand, community need around meals programs. And I'd like to talk a little bit about senior need for meals in support of this move to broad-based categorical eligibility. So at the beginning of the pandemic, we've been pretty much serving about the same number of meals every year, about 82,000 meals a year. For, I don't know, about a decade, we saw that the need was pretty constant. Over the first 3 years of the pandemic, we saw a 72% increase in the number of meals that we served to seniors. We went from 82,000 meals a year served to 141,000 meals served. We also saw a huge increase in the number of individual and new seniors asking for meals from our program. We were able to do that huge growth of our program thanks to relief funds, both from the state of Alaska and from the 10 tribes that we partner with and have partnered with for decades. What we saw after the president announced the end to the health emergency, we saw we expected a reduction in the amount of meals we served because not everybody would be automatically eligible for home-delivered meals. People didn't have to shelter in place. You need to be homebound to get that meal delivered to your home. We went through and talked to every single senior that got home-delivered meals. We only saw a 7% decrease in the number of meals served in fiscal year 23. What we found, and this is not unusual, is that the seniors have been isolated and in their homes for so long that we saw a huge decompensation in their abilities. This is a much more fragile, both health-wise and ability-wise group of people now. Prior to the pandemic, about 50% of the meals were served at the senior center and 50 were delivered to people's homes. That's more like 25%, 75% now. And we assess folks every single year. We're not seeing a decrease in demand, but of course we're seeing a huge decrease in the amount of relief funding. That relief funding is almost gone. We already have made cutbacks to our meals programs in that we have closed our senior centers from 5 days a week. Now we're only open 4 days a week, but we've given them a bag lunch on that last day to make sure the amount of nutrition that we provide is consistent. We have not reduced access to food. At this point, my agency is seriously looking at whether we can maintain that level of food assistance. So we are incredibly grateful to look at broad-based categorical eligibility because right now we're looking at a huge bunch of seniors who are very food insecure already. I was in Hoonah last week at our senior center and talked to the seniors there. And they expressed concern, when are we going to get our fifth day of the senior center back? You know, we'd rather have a hot meal together. And I explained the situation and the relief funds. And they mentioned how much they depend on the SNAP program and how grateful they are for that food assistance and how dependent they are on that for their meals. If they don't get SNAP, then many of them say that the meal they get from the senior center is the only meal they get all day. And I should say also that this is a very low-cost intervention. Providing food assistance is a low-cost intervention that saves money. The number one reason that seniors fall, break a hip, and go in the hospital is poor nutrition. If seniors are allowed to have enough food, encouraged to eat, they are far less likely to lose their independence. And communities are far more likely to have higher expenses for emergency medical response, higher hospital, unpaid hospital bills, and more people going into assisted living sooner. So we really are supportive that the increase from 130 to 200% of poverty level, that they'll grab a whole new group of seniors who are food insecure as costs go up of both food and the cost of living. And getting rid of that asset test is going to be a game changer for a lot of folks, especially who have homes but are very cash poor. So we're hoping that we'll go ahead and you will go ahead and support broad-based categorical eligibility. And I can also say, prior to working at Catholic Community Service, I was actually working for public assistance here at the state. I was formerly the chief of policy and program development, and I was the SNAP director for the state of Alaska. So I feel confident in saying that removing the asset test does simplify and reduce the amount of time it takes for public assistance workers to process those applications and get people the help they need much more efficiently, quickly, and with fewer errors on the case. So thank you for this opportunity to testify, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to talk.
Do we have any further questions by members of the committee for Ms. Walker-Tolles? Senator Stedman.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, then maybe a brief question. The comment being that I think a lot of seniors, this is the only outside contact they get at their home. So if they do fall or they do have a health issue, the Meals on Wheel delivery, there's somebody physically knocking on their door to see that that the senior is okay and is there to, you know, take the lunch. So I think this is a very important program, to say the least, at least in the communities I represent. But I would like to make a comment, Mr. Chairman. This is the second piece of testimony we've had on the efficiency increase we'd have by taking out the asset-based test, but the fiscal note that we're looking at adding people. So if the previous testimony is accurate, we should actually be deleting people or at least having less workload for the, I know they're understaffed, so that would help the understaffed position. But I just want to point out that when it comes time to look at these physical notes, it doesn't seem to be lining up with the testimony.
Sure. Any comment, Ms. Walker-Tolles?
Through the chair, I will say, yes, processing more cases will take more time. However, the amount of time per case will definitely go down because of the elimination of the asset test. I guess the real issue is, where do you want to save the money? Because I do feel that and see in the community that providing that food assistance and that early intervention, it does save energy and effort throughout the rest of the state of Alaska system, as well as local state and borough and city systems. The amount of people going into the hospital needing assistance, needing support to find new housing and get into different wait lists. We have fewer people going into assisted living or going into assisted living later if they have the decent food assistance earlier on. So I think there are savings and efficiencies throughout. But absolutely, if there are more cases to process, it will take more time. And I would defer to the public assistance folks to find out in terms of how many more cases would they be processing versus how much time they'd be saving on each case. Those are calculations I defer to the state on.
Sure. Any further questions by the members of the committee from Ms. Walker-Tolles? Senator Bishop? Okay, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
On the schedule, we have Deb Etheridge, who's the director of the Division of Public Assistance. If she'd like to comment on some of the issues that were brought up by Senator Stedman and related to the fiscal note as well, please.
Hello. For the record, my name is Deb Etheridge. I'm the Director for the Division of Public Assistance, and thank you for inviting me here today to talk a little bit about the fiscal notes that are attached to this bill. Through the Chair, Representative Stedman, Senator Stedman, you'll note that there's two fiscal notes from the Division of Public Assistance. One of them is for the policy area, and the other is for quality. The fiscal notes are not related to a field processing of cases. Broad-based categorical eligibility is also predicated upon the individual receiving what's called a non-cash TANF benefit. So the State of Alaska Division of Public Assistance remains responsible for providing those individuals who are who benefit from broad-based categorical eligibility this non-cash benefit. This can look a variety of ways within various states. Some states issue a non-cash benefit that looks like an education and training brochure for individuals that meet the TANF missions. Some states will implement a free ride service for individuals. So that body of work, while it's done, reflected in sort of what you think about when you think about broad-based categorical eligibility, it does fall on the shoulders of the Division of Public Assistance to do that. And then the other piece of so that is the policy area, and the other fiscal note related to that is around our quality and our quality work. It's imperative for the division to not only implement a program, but also to ensure that we provide quality and quality service and case review to Alaskans, and we meet our federal requirements.
Any further questions by members of the committee from Ms. Etheridge? Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Now we're going to open up to public testimony. We have a number of people here for public testimony that are some that are in the room and some of them are online. We'd like to put it, because we're running out of time, we'd like to put a 2-minute limit on that. First one up is going to be Jimmy Morgan. Please come up, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony. Two minutes, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jamie Morgan. I am the Senior Region Lead for the American Heart Association Government Affairs, and I'm pleased to be here today and speak in support of this important bill. Implementing broad-based categorical eligibility will provide targeted assistance for low-income working families and seniors. Raising the gross income limit primarily benefits working families. Thank you. I know I'm a little lower in the chair than most, right? Raising the gross income limit primarily benefits working families with children, as they are more likely to have competing expenses like childcare, housing, and utilities, leaving them unable to afford the necessary foods they need for a healthy diet, which is key to preventing heart disease and stroke. States that have adopted SNAP supportive policies like BBCE generally have more SNAP eligible participation than do states without these policies. Policies that make SNAP easier to access increase participation in the program, food insecurity is reduced, and fewer children and families go hungry. This legislation comes at a time that food insecurity levels are already elevated, and SNAP is a crucial program that helps Alaska's anti-hunger network meet this need. It is for these reasons we support SB 149 to reduce hunger in Alaska, eliminate administrative burdens on DPA, and save the state money. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next we have up is Rachel Lord. Ms. Lord? Please identify yourself. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony. You got 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Olson and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Rachel Lord. I live in Homer, and I'm testifying in my role as Advocacy and Policy Director for the Alaska Food Policy Council in strong support of SB 149 to implement broad-based categorical eligibility within Alaska's SNAP program. AFPC is a nonpartisan statewide organization working through connection, information, and advocacy to strengthen Alaska's food systems. We work closely with the legislature, the governor, and partners like the Food Bank of Alaska and the Food Coalition, of which we are a member, on efforts to decrease hunger and ensure all Alaskans have access to food. At the Alaska Food Policy Council, we are committed to developing and supporting evidence-based strategies that promote food security, Alaskan agriculture, and access to nutritious food. The implementation of BBCE, as outlined in SB 149, aligns with our organization's vision of healthy, secure, abundant food systems that feed all Alaskans. By simplifying the SNAP application process and ensuring access to vital nutritional support for vulnerable populations, this bill will not only improve the lives of Alaskan residents, but also offer substantial benefits to the state. We at AFPC strongly support SB 149. Thank you for hearing this bill, taking public testimony, and we encourage you to move SB 149 from committee as soon as possible.
Mr. Lord, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next up we have is Hannah Hill. Ms. Hill, are you on, ma'am?
Hello. Thank you to the chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee for this opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Hannah Hill, and I'm the executive director of the Breadline, which is an anti-hunger organization up here in Fairbanks. We have been feeding people and affirming lives for the past 40 years in our community, and I'm testifying today to express our strong support for Senate Bill 149, adopting broad-based categorical eligibility for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. When Alaskans who need assistance are not able to receive food stamps, as we have recently seen in the rolling SNAP backlogs, they're forced to turn to food banks, pantries, and soup kitchens like the Breadline. Since the beginning of the 2022 SNAP backlog, every month at the Breadline Soup Kitchen, that's the Stone Soup Cafe, has been a record breaker. That is 17 months of unprecedented need. Last year, we served 59,581 meals, which is an astonishing 25% increase over the year before. Already, 2024 has recorded a 9% increase over 2023. Food relief organizations in every district across Alaska are facing alarmingly elevated levels of community hunger that are being significantly compounded by a decline in local donations and the federal commodity program. Anti-hunger organizations are serving more food to more people than ever. The Breadline Soup Kitchen has seen more families and more elders over the last year and a half, and we are struggling to sustain this level of service. The success of and demand for our work in Fairbanks demonstrates the level of food insecurity that many Alaskans continue to experience. Broad-based categorical eligibility would help protect Alaskans from future backlogs as well as the benefits cliff. Instead, Alaskans would have access to another path towards economic and food security. This targeted assistance, focusing on low-income working families and seniors, will protect vulnerable Alaskan households from facing preventable hunger. Raising the gross income limit primarily benefits working families with children, as they are more likely to have life expenses such as childcare, housing, and utilities, which leaves struggling families unable to afford good food necessary for a healthy diet. Removing the asset test will help Alaskans, often seniors, who have a modest savings and other assets that remain qualified for the assistance that they need. In my industry, the SNAP asset test, gross income in eligibility limits are often called the benefits cliff, meaning that already struggling Alaskans fall off a metaphoric cliff when they are denied SNAP benefits. There's so much good that adopting broad-based categorical eligibility will do. It'll bring into the state SNAP process.
Ms. Hill, if you kindly go ahead and wrap up your testimony for 2 minutes or
so. Oh, sure. Thank you. SB 149 has the Breadline's full support, reducing hunger in Alaska, eliminating administrative burden. Thank you for the opportunity to testify for this important piece of legislation, and I certainly hope that this bill moves forward.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next we have up is Duane Patterson. Mr. Patterson, are you on, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead with your 2 minutes, please.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to testify, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Dwayne Patterson. I am the director of St. Francis House Food Pantry at Catholic Social Services in Anchorage. SB 149 reduces the extensive administrative burden on the Division of Public Assistance. When there's any delay in receiving SNAP benefits, it puts a tremendous strain on our ability to assist people. In 2023, we had a 29% increase from 22. That equaled to almost 11,000 individuals in just a year's time. A common comment I often heard was, you know, I haven't received my SNAP, so I have to come to the pantry. I've never been here before. to either do that or put gas in my car so I can go to work or, you know, pay my bills or whatever. Like, these are working families struggling with the cost of childcare, housing, gasoline, and all kinds of other things. The asset test penalizes families striving to increase income and savings, crucial steps towards self-sufficiency. Eliminating the test empowers families to build assets and is particularly beneficial for seniors who often rely on these key essential savings. So we here at the St. Francis House Food Pantry wholeheartedly support this legislation and hope Alaska joins the 42 other states already utilizing this. And thank you again and for allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Patterson. Next we have up is Ray Ward. Mr. Ward, are you on, sir?
Yes, hello.
Please identify yourself for the record and go over the 2 minutes, please.
Yes, my name is Ray Ward, and I live in Anchorage, and I'm a handicapped senior citizen, voter and taxpayer in the state of Alaska, and I wholeheartedly support this bill, SB 149, and urge you legislators there to pass it because I live alone. I have no family up here, no relatives, no friends. So it is very difficult for me here living on my disability income. In the past 5 years, I have applied for public assistance and was denied because I was ineligible because my income exceeded the income limit adopted by the state of Alaska for the, following the federal poverty level guideline by $67. I own my own home, but by the time I pay all my utilities for the home, the utilities, the bills, insurance, I have only about $200 left per month. And often I don't have enough to buy food to carry me through to the next month. So frequently it's 1 or 2 days that I have to go without eating, sir. So I urge you all to pass this bill because this will allow other senior citizens, the group of the population like myself that has totally been overlooked and left out of the society. And like I said, living on this, my disability income doesn't allow me to qualify for the public assistance. Like I said, I've been denied 3 times, and like I said, I don't have enough money to buy food, enough food, so sometimes I go 2 days without eating, sir. So I know you legislators there, housing and food is the least thing that you all have to worry about because most of you all are wealthy. So the category that I'm in and many other Alaskans like this, particularly seniors, homeless people, it's a challenge for us to, it's a challenge and struggle to live, sir. So I urge you legislators there in Juneau to please support and pass this bill because this will allow individuals like myself.
Mr. Ward, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon and giving us your testimony. Next we have up is Scott Lingle. Mr. Lingle, are you on, sir?
Yes, thank you to the chair and to the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Scott Lingle, CEO of Beans Cafe in Anchorage. I firmly believe that SB 149 will bring about significant positive changes that will benefit our committees in numerous ways. Families may lose their benefits when their earnings increase. A single mother with 2 children working full-time at $12.75 an hour would receive about $96 a month from SNAP, accounting for 4% of their total monthly income. If her hourly wage increases by just 50 cents or 86 cents a month, lifting her income slightly above the 130% of federal poverty guidelines, the family will become ineligible under SNAP benefits. About 3 months ago, I had the privilege of serving some people in Mountain View. And a little girl came up to me and said, sir, can I have 7 meals? And I said, 7 meals? That's an awful lot of meals for such a young little girl. She was about 9 years old. And she says, well, sir, there's four brothers and sisters and myself, my mom and dad. There's seven of us in my family. And she said, but if this is too much, because we don't have enough SNAP benefits for this, if this is too much, today's not my day to eat. So I will take the day off so the rest of my family can have. This is a 9-year-old little girl telling me she has to take the day off from eating. As a resident of Alaska and a concerned service provider, I urge you to support Bill SB 149 and help ensure its passage through the Senate HHS committee. Your support for this important bill will undoubtedly make a lasting impact on the lives of many individuals in our state. Thank you for your time and attention to this matter.
Mr. Lingle, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. We'd like to go ahead and close public testimony. Any discussions amongst the members of the committee? If not, Ms. Brown, would you please give us some closing comments before we set this bill aside?
For the record, Paige Brown, staff to Senator Kathy Kiesel. If you guys have any questions, I'm available to answer, but otherwise, thank you so much for hearing this bill.
Well, it seems like from the public testimony, we're getting a lot fair amount of support for it out there, mm-hmm. especially toward the asset portion of it that's is being eliminated. Any further questions by members of the committee for Ms. Brown? Okay, thank you very much. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside. Next bill up is Senate Bill 204, Certificate of Fitness, Plumbers and Electricians by request of the governor. This is the first hearing. We have invited testimony. Kathy Munoz, Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, would you please introduce the bill to us?
Thank you, Chair Olson, Co-Chair Stedman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Munoz, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Thank you for the opportunity to present SB 204, a piece of legislation that relates to the issuance of certificate of fitnesses for plumbers and electricians. The legislation before you changes the training certificate of fitness, which is required by state law, from 2 years to 6 years. These are for trainees that are pursuing an electrical or a plumbing pathway. Currently, if a trainee fails to renew their COF, the hours worked during the lapse cannot be counted toward their journeyman certification. I first heard about this about a year ago, and I said, this is something we have to correct. We had people coming to us ready to sit for the journeyman certificate, and often were unable to count all of the hours because of a possible a lapse of a certificate of fitness. So by changing this to a 6-year certificate, we avoid that situation. A typical training period is 4 years or 8,000 hours. So by going to six years, I think we cover the typical apprenticeship period, but then other eventualities. If a person were to step away from training, they would and then came back, their certificate would still be valid for up to 6 years. The legislation also increases the journeyman level certificate of fitness renewal certificate from $200 to $300. The elimination of the requirement for trainee apprentices to apply for and pay for renewals during their training period will expedite the apprenticeship procedure overall and will avoid the untenable situation like I described, where we're having to reject hours that were worked on an elapsed COF. With me today is the Chief of the Mechanical Inspection Unit, Scott Damereaux, who will walk us through a presentation on the legislation, and we're both available for questions afterward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Damereaux, are you on, sir?
I am. Thank you for having me today. For the record, my name is Scott Damereaux. I am the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Chief of Mechanical Inspection. I have a PowerPoint presentation, but being on the phone, I can't verify visually.
Mr. Damereaux, we have Ken Halper, who's the finance aide for this afternoon. He will be clicking your slides across.
Okay, so you should see slide number one, SB 204, Certificate of Fitness, Plumbers and Electricians.
Yes.
Are we caught up on that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, we can move to slide two. This proposal, as the commissioner said, would change the duration of the training certificate of fitness from 2 to 6 years with no change in the fees, and increase the fees of journey level licenses from 200 biannually to 300. I'll move through this quickly because I understand we're on a time constraint. But any questions that the committee has, I welcome you to interrupt the presentation and we can answer them in line. Moving to slide page 3. As the commissioner said, trainees currently have to renew their license mid-apprenticeship. Many forget to do this or neglect to do this or for some reason fall behind, and that results in undue delays in getting their journey level card and time wasted that they work that we cannot count towards their hours. Slide 4, please. This is a fairly simple breakdown of all the different licenses that we issue. The main point of this is that the bulk of them, the yellow and the blue, are the plumber and the electrician licenses that are affected by this proposed legislation. These abbreviations are also used elsewhere in this presentation. Slide 5, please. This is new licenses issued annually, and we see some ups and downs, but overall we see a slight decrease trending over the last 5 years. But for the most part, the new licenses issued are, so this gives an idea of the weighted licensing that we issue again, kind of a different by time version of the pie chart. Then we can go to slide 6. This slide shows the more alarming trends for plumber's licenses, the solid blue line. Plumber journeyman licenses are trending downward. We are getting less plumbers in the state overall. More are leaving the state, retiring out, or just not renewing their cards than are renewing overall. Slide 7 demonstrates the same trend for electricians throughout the state. The goal of this proposed legislation would be to stave this trend by encouraging more people to become apprentices and more apprentices to get their journey card faster and thus have more workers available in Alaska to do these projects. Slide 8 is merely the for completion, the other licenses that we issue. Slide 9. This is a note recap of the trainee requirements. Both plumbers and electricians require 8,000 legally obtained on the job hours. They can have some classroom hours. They have to take a test and they have to pay the $200 fee to get licensed. The problem we have is the 8,000 legally obtained hours. Those have to be obtained while holding a current certificate of fitness as a trainee that we are seeking to change. Slide 10 shows that the barriers are employers sometimes don't do the form correctly, employers may not be available, some of the work isn't legally obtained, and what we're proposing here today would take care of the one in red. Trainee certificate of fitness is lapsed, and when they're lapsed, those hours cannot be counted. Slide 11, this is the total in the last 5 years of the number of days that trainees had left. This is calculated based on a trainee that lets their license go, they continue to work, and then they come back in and renew their license. These days were the calculated total of those hours that were worked under training, under an apprenticeship program, but we are not allowed to count them towards their journeyman. So this is a very significant number we are trying to correct here. Slide 12, the renewal of a trainee certificate of fitness currently only requires $200 fee. There is no other check or balance to renewing. So by extending this license, we are not losing any check on the trainee other than simply collecting a fee from that trainee. Slide 13, So the impact would overall lower the price of an apprenticeship for a trainee, significantly reduce the administrative requirements for renewals. We would no longer have to renew trainee licenses. The trainees would not have to contact our office for that renewal. And the end result, the biggest impact, is the trainee work all now would be able to be counted as legitimate hours holding the license once they obtain. This would hopefully incentivize more workers to enter trade programs. The combination in this proposed legislation would shift more financial burden to the journey level workers who typically make double what trainees make and allow apprentices to journey out quicker by having all of their hours counted. Slide 14, please. This is a graph of how the fee changes would look. We have not changed fees on these licenses since 2006, so we're 17 years at the same rate. Honestly, the fee change for electricians and plumbers would probably need to be proposed even without this, but we put these together because we can't do the lowering of program receipts from the trainee licenses without compensating on the other side. And slide 14, this is how we arrived by the $300 number. We checked the consumer price index for the time period from 2006 to 2023. So the $200 then gives about the same buying power as $300 today. So we weren't just pulling numbers out of the air. We were trying to model this based on actual spending that the department has to spend through program receipts. And slide 16 is the end of the presentation, and I will be on the line to take any questions.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Damerel? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Damerel. Next, we're going to go on to public testimony. Do we have anybody in the room that likes to testify? Do you have anybody online that wants to testify? We'll go ahead and close public testimony. Any further questions or discussions by members of the committee before we set this bill aside? Okay, thank you very much. We'll set Senate Bill 204 aside. Next bill up is Senate Bill 248, Big Game Commercial Services Board by Senator Bjorkman. This is the first hearing. I'd like to have his trustee aide come on up and introduce the bill. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record, Mr. Matuszewski, and go ahead with your introduction.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ramey Matuszewski, staff to Senator Bjorkman, and I am here to present Senate Bill 248, which adds an executive administrator to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Senator Bjorkman is currently chairing the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee and is unable to join us, so I'm going to go through the sponsor statement.
Please.
Senate Bill 248 adds an executive administrator to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. The addition of such a position would support the board as they look at the licenses they oversee, including registered guide outfitters, master guide outfitters, and transporters. An executive administrator assigned to this board would be a complex job that requires the employee to work with multiple departments, generate reports, and assist investigative services and the Department of Public Safety in investigations. The lack of this position is felt whenever a new individual comes in to fulfill these responsibilities as a licensing examiner. Being a licensing examiner has become a bit of a stepping stone position, and each turnover requires training from the ground up. This has led to some administrative errors that were highlighted in the recent audit of the board. While the board has been sharing an executive administrator with the Board of Marine Pilots, it has not fully resolved the issues, as both boards need much more than half of that person's time. This bill seeks to address those issues by providing a position that would encourage consistency and support of the board and its functions. The Big Game Commercial Services Board plays an important role in the management of commercial game hunters in the interest of the state's wildlife resources. Thank you for your consideration of this legislation.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Matuszewski? If not, we'll go ahead and go on into invited testimony. First up is Aaron Bloomquist, who's the guided member of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Please, are you on, sir?
I am, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I hope you're all great today.
Please identify yourself.
My name is Aaron Bloomquist.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Aaron Bloomquist. I'm the new chairman of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. The Big Game Commercial Services Board is the board that regulates the tradition of hunting, guiding, and transporting in Alaska. We are tasked with assuring licensees provide conservation-based, professional, and safe services to Alaskans and visiting hunters alike. I was elected to my chairmanship just a month ago, so I'm a bit of a newbie here. Many of you have met our outgoing chairman, Jason Bunch. I have massive boots to fill, and I'll be lucky just to fill the cracks in his soles. But Jason was the most dedicated and truly elite human being I've ever seen in 20-plus years of serving on boards and commissions. He made my job a full-time job. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do that, but this board's been extremely effective for its licensees and their clients, largely due to Jason's work over the last 5 years or so. But for that to continue, we're going to need appropriate staff. The Big Game Commercial Services Board traditionally had two full-time staffers, sometimes three, you know, a decade or two ago. And now we've got two staff, both shared with other boards that, you know, we have sections of time, sometimes months, that are, you know, simply we just don't have staff because they're dedicated to the Marine Pilots Board or other tasks. We're a self-funded vocation and have money in our account for the proposed EA position. Licensees have paid through their fees to take this board from significantly in the red to about a $700,000 surplus over the last decade. The board is a bit complicated. It takes a lot of time. It takes a whole bunch of institutional knowledge. We're asking for a level 23 because we want it to be a position someone seeks to attain rather than a stepping stone to go somewhere else. Our complicated statutes and regulations and the nature of, you know, our like ever adapting businesses, seasonal nature, means this is not a board that any old staffer can just jump in and operate effectively. It takes a couple years to get a new staff person up to speed, meaning that licensees are not served very well in the meantime. Industry-specific knowledge is critical in this position. While formal education is not necessarily much of an advantage, our audit recommended some more administrative oversight, and the division provided a trial run with a shared EA, and it's working to some extent, but we really need to get back to a situation where we have a full-time dedicated staff person. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I know you guys are busy, so I'm going to keep this short. I will take questions if you have it.
Do you have any questions before Mr. Bloomquist by members of the committee? I want to thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Bloomquist. We've got Sylvan Robb, who's in the gallery. Please come on up and just speak to the fiscal note, if you would. It's pretty significant where you are operating in the red, and next thing you know, you have a $700,000 surplus. Tell us where the funds are coming from and what they are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. As with all of our funding for professional licensing within the division, the funding for this position would come from fees paid by the licensees of the program. So this would be the guides themselves who are covering these funds. It's through Fund 1156, Receipt Supported Services. So the amount that you'll see on the fiscal note isn't looking at the out year of like FY26 is $185,000. That is not the full increase that the board would feel, because again, they do have staffing now and are paying for the portion of the staffer that Chair Bloomquist was referring to. So the board would see an increase of just under $90,000, we anticipate.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for Mr. Rob, especially related to the fiscal note? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. We'd like to go ahead and open public testimony. Is anybody in the room that wants to testify, or anybody online that wants to testify? I see nobody coming out and up. We'll go ahead and close public testimony. Any further discussion or questions by members of the committee? If not, we'll set this bill aside. Next bill up we have is Senate Bill 182, the Big Game Commercial Services Board by Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We first heard this bill on April 9th and took public testimony. We requested amendments from members of the committee and did not receive any. Mr. Alper, would you please come up and remind the committee what the bill is all about? And we'll continue on with commission with additional committee discussion. Mr. Alper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ken Alper, staff to Senator Olson and the Finance Committee. Senate Bill 182 is a straight-up extension to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. It has an eight-year extension, which would go until 2032. You'll recall during the earlier hearings, we had Chris Curtis, the legislative auditor, go through her findings related to this board. There weren't substantial issues, and so this is a maximum length extension, the eight-year period.
Okay. Any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Alper? Senator Wilson, do we have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 182, Work Order 33LS1124/A from committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal note.
Without objection, Senate Bill 182 moves from committee. Take a brief at ease. Senate bill up is Senate Bill 234 to extend the Marijuana Control Board by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We first heard this bill on April 3rd and April 4th through public testimony. We requested amendments from the members of the committee, did not receive any. Mr. Alper, please remind us what this bill is all about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Ken Alper. So this is another board extension, Mr. Chairman, the Marijuana Control Board. And you did hear from Chris Curtis and the director of the agency at the Department of Commerce earlier this month. The unusual thing within this bill is that it's only a three-year extension. Not that there's any issues with the board itself, but the staff and the investigation group is shared task with the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, and they are up for a renewal in 3 years. So the auditor felt it would be appropriate to get the two boards in alignment with each other for extension so they can be handled in parallel at the next renewal to the ABC board 3 years from now. And there's no changes, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Alper? If not, Ms. Curtis, would you mind coming on up there and just talk to us about why it's only a three-year extension as opposed to one that's probably a little bit longer?
Certainly, I'm Chris Curtis, your state legislative auditor. As Ken Appler mentioned, this will align the board with the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. Also, the audit points out that the governor's task force on recreational marijuana has recently issued a report that will likely lead to significant changes in how AMCO, which is the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office, works, and possibly how the board works as well. So we think a three-year timeline is prudent to come back and review their operations.
Okay. Any questions by members of the committee from our state auditor, Ms. Curtis? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Any additional comments by members of the committee on this bill? Senator Merrick, do we have a question? Do we have a motion, please?
Thank you, Chair Olson. I move Senate Bill 234, Work Order 33-LS1358/alpha from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, without objection, Senate Bill 234 moves from committee. That concludes our agenda for today. Next hearing will be tomorrow at 9 a.m. First hearing on two bills, which is Senate Bill 131, Asian American and Pacific Islander Program by Senator Gray Jackson. House Bill 89, Child Care Tax Credit and Grants by Representative Colomb. There's no other business to come before the committee. We are adjourned at 2:35 p.m.